Okay.
So sign up for the tour on Thursday.
I'll talk about it.
Okay, let's get going. Welcome. Glad to see everybody. Anybody have any questions? Everybody getting a quick start in their projects? Better say yes. So, on Thursday, we had a talk by Debbie Kenny, and she brought some of her students. These are folks that have had stroke. And her class was so packed full of information that it went over a little bit. Some people stuck around and saw the interview with the users, but others had to leave. For those people that had to leave, the audio is online now, and I've also, as of today, posted photos from the previous class session. So if you want to, you know, relive the visual part of some of these lectures, please check that out. It's on the each lecture has its own webpage, and at the bottom there's a lecture material that has that information. Okay, so that's where the audio is. Agenda for today is I'm going to be talking about the tour that we're having on Thursday to Will Garage, which is a robotics company, and who doesn't like robotics? And this is a premier robotics company in the world, probably, so it's going to be a lot of fun and very informative, so hold on to your hands. A little bit more on team formation, shop passes. We'll have a little bit of a discussion on famous people with disabilities, and then we'll have a little break, and then we'll have our panel of Stanford students with a disability. And Fiona won't be here today. She misplaced her voice. Okay. But hopefully she'll be better. So Will Garage Tour is on Thursday. I have to set up a bunch of drivers who, if you need a ride, they'll be happy to drive you. Here's a sheet that you sign up for to get your ride. Make sure you note who your driver is and their cell phone number, so in case something comes up, you can call them and include your cell phone number, so if you're not around, they can call you. And I'll send out information to the drivers and to the passengers, basically reproducing this list so you know who's going where, and the drivers know who they're taking. So it's right in Menlo Park here, and basically, if you're gonna bike or drive yourself, you just go out on University, make this a roundabout, and go down on Everett or Lytton, and go down to Middlefield, make a left on Will, and it's on the left. So there's lots of maps. It's not very hard to find, so it should be pretty easy. And then if you're flying in, okay, here's what it looks like. So there's parking along the driveway over here and in the back, and the entranceway is right here. So we'll convene in the lobby there, that's where our tour will start. Okay, so it looks like all the project teams have been formed. Some of them still need to send me the name of their team, and that might work out after you get to know your team and can come to a consensus. What? Yes.
Quick question about the Willow Garage. For those of us that it'll be easiest to drive ourselves, what time do we need to be there?
Try to leave here around 4:15 to get there at 4:30.
Okay.
And we'll be... Hopefully it'll be a one-hour tour, not a three-hour tour. In a cruise. Okay. Kevin.
On behalf of the drivers, I'd like to say punctuality at the pickup point is very much appreciated.
Right. Yes, please make your very best effort to be here on time. We'll meet, the passengers will meet the drivers right out here in the breezeway. Okay? So that's convenient. Name of team, and then eventually come up with a name for your project, because it's easy to refer to that way. And think about the device or the software app that you're developing, and as it gets some character, maybe you can give that a name too. And if you're artistic, you can think of a logo. For people that are working on teams, I would like to meet with all the teams for a short time, maybe on Friday morning or late Friday afternoon, so let me know what time is convenient for you. For teams composed of just one member, I just want to let you know that I'm a part of your team, and you can't do brainstorming as a team of one, so I'm here to help you brainstorm, and I'm here to help all the students on their project, so I'm a resource that you should take advantage of. Okay, now last year students also worked on projects, and I had them write up their comments about what they would do differently if they had to do it again. So this is information from last year's students. They're talking to you and giving you some very good advice. The students said, I want to spend a large amount of time on empathizing. Engage the team in longer brainstorming process. Repeated sessions of brainstorming. Okay? These sessions provide the best opportunities for advancing the design and making each prototype more effective. Define the problem as specifically as possible from the beginning. So know what the need is. Define the need. And don't lose track of that. Prototyping early is a must. I can't emphasize this more. You need to start prototyping, whether it's in your mind, on a sheet of paper, on a CAD, with foam core, whatever. You need to get it to a 3D model that you can look at and turn over and understand what works and what doesn't work. This is really critical. So you need to get started earlier on building things, even if they are less than best quality. So please document everything that you do. I will be grading on you on the number of failures. So you want to document your failures. The more failures you have, the better you're doing. Okay? You got that? Seek out more users. If you're working on a problem that could benefit more than one user, try to talk to a lot of people so you have a more general idea of what's needed. If you talk to one person, you're going to get an idea of what that one person needs and maybe no others. So if you want to do something that would benefit lots of people, you need to talk to more than one. Involve users throughout the entire process. This will contribute to an overall more effective and successful concept and design. Okay? These are the things that I sort of said, and now the students from last year are saying that to you. Prototype far more often. So you really need to do that. By the way, all these slides will be up on the web tomorrow morning. So if this isn't the last time you're going to be seeing them, I mean, you can see them and refer to them by going to the web. Determine a need as quickly as possible. Decide on it within the first 2 weeks of class. Well, through interviews and meeting with users. So I hope the message comes through, not just from me, but from other folks as well. Invest more time in talking to fellow students because they can be a good source of ideas, and you're more than welcome to brainstorm with anybody, your fellow students, people in the dorm, your friends, whatever. Get ideas from them. The more people you have involved in the process, the more ideas that can be thrown out. Utilize the teaching staff more, and also the resource people that I told you about on the first day of class. There's lots of expertise there for you to draw on, so use them. Keep in touch with users, consult different professionals, and prototype your ideas. So, okay, so that should be that. These concepts should be in mind. So if you do all these things, you'll have a higher chance of being successful. I submitted the form for the shop passes. I don't know how long they take, maybe a day or two, but I'll let you know when those come through. So, Remember from the session last Tuesday, we talked about empathy and getting to know the user? Well, if you don't have a user and you want to create your own empathy, you know, you can use a suit like this. So this is a suit that purposely makes you feel old, okay? So it has all these visual impediments and moving impediments and stuff like that. So this is from MIT. They did that in their age lab. So this is a way to get empathy if you want to, you know, see for yourself how it would feel to be an older user or somebody who's in need of a new device. Okay. So yesterday was Martin Luther King Day, and I thought of some of his teachings, and I remember his I Have a Dream speech, and I want to make one quote. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. That's a very strong sentence. And we can, with a little finagling, and I do have a poetic license, I can show it to you later on, I can change that. So instead of four little children, substitute, you know, everybody in the country, okay? Can we do that?
Sure.
And be not be judged by the color of their skin, we can change that to their disabilities, okay? And instead of content of their character, we can add their abilities, okay? So we can very easily extrapolate from what Dr. Martin Luther King said to people with disabilities. So I want to, a couple years ago, I went through my memory and sorted out in my database famous people that I knew of with disabilities, and I'd like to share that with you. Of course, we know that even smart people like Albert Einstein, you know, he had a learning disability and he was a very bad student early on. You know, there's folks that have diseases that have made an impairment in their life, but some of them have achieved quite well. We all know Christopher Reeve, even President Roosevelt, you know, he had polio and he was in a wheelchair for a long time. Helen Keller was deafblind, and yet she was a fantastic person and an excellent writer and spokesman. Itzhak Perlman played at the inauguration 4 years ago, and Jay Leno, he always says, you know, I'm a little bit dyslexic. And we had some a pitcher with a missing hand. John Callahan was a great, funny cartoonist with quadriplegia. We have a number of musicians who are blind. Josh Blue won the Last Comic Standing Award on the show. Lou Ferrigno, he played the Incredible. Oh, okay, great. Lou Gehrig had Lou Gehrig's disease, also known as ALS. How frustrating must it have been for Beethoven to have a hearing loss and being a composer? That was must have been pretty bad. One might argue just because you have HIV, maybe it doesn't count as a disability, but he had to give up basketball because of it. We saw Marley Matlin on The Apprentice. Mary Tyler Moore does fundraising for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. She's very active in that. And Sonia Sotomayor, I found out in 60 Minutes, has type 1 diabetes. We've seen Michael J. Fox on TV a lot, and Muhammad Ali. And how many people, this is a rare picture of Moses. How many people know that he had a speech impediment from their Bible studies? Okay. But the reason for that was that, so it said that, no, God didn't want him to be too revered, so he gave him a speech impediment. So, Ray Charles, Richard Pryor, Sammy Davis Jr. We talked about Stephen Hawking and Stevie Wonder. He played yesterday at the inaugural, one of the inaugural events. Closer to home, Professor Leifer in the Mechanical Engineering Department has a hearing impairment. Professor Kane has has a number of impairments, and one of the guys who was instrumental in starting the internet has a hearing impairment. And then we have Terry Adams, who's a wheelchair user. Hi, Terry. TV Rahman from Google. He is a blind programmer. We'll hear from Peter Axelson later on in the quarter. David Patterson is governor of New York. We'll also hear from Ralph Hotchkiss, who's an engineer. And Bethany, how do you think she lost her arm? Yeah. And here's some I added this year. Horatio Nelson, Lord Nelson. You can see he's wearing a coat with, he has a missing right arm here. And just died a few months ago, Daniel Inouye from Hawaii, taking the oath of the office with his left hand. And I'm not sure you have to have your other hand on a Bible, so that may be a problem for him. And Gabrielle Giffords, of course, had brain injury. Can you think of some others? If you come up with any ideas, let me know so I can add them on to next year. But the point is that a lot of people have talent that I wouldn't say despite of a disability, but just because of their force of character are able to achieve. So it's really interesting to follow these people and maybe use them as a role model, not for just for people with disabilities, but for all of us. So on Thursday, we have our tour of Willow Garage, and we'll be meeting all these people. Henry Evans is a resident of Los Altos. He has quadriplegia and to the point where he can't speak either. It's that high up. He can't speak. And he also has trouble controlling his body temperature. So he might be wrapped in blankets or coats and stuff like that, which is pretty unusual. And then, here's the top of the robot. How many people know of the PR2 robot? Seen it on TV? Okay. Yeah. So this is a very high-end robot, and you'll see how these kinds of robots can be applied to help people with disabilities, and that's what the Bull Garage's project, Robots for Humanity project, seeks to do. So today we're going to have four students, Fiona... doesn't have her voice, so she won't be here, talk about themselves and their disabilities. So what we'll do now is we'll set up, we'll take a little break, and Morgan will be the first one, and so don't change your channel. Any questions? Any of the stuff? Any comments, thoughts? Anything you'd like to say at all? Yeah?
Well, this might be a good time to point out that if you go to the Easter Seal website, there's guidelines for writing about persons with disabilities.
Oh, right.
If
you can find that link up, could you send it to me? And I'll post it for the students. It'd be a good time for students to come in and sign in if they haven't done so. Take an evaluation form, sign up for the carpooling, and have a cookie. Yes. That's Anna. And where's Richard? Richard's right here. Okay. Are you in the team?
No, I was going to say.
Okay. Okay. Four. Oh, if you want to sign up, if you don't get my newsletters, you can sign up.
I don't know where I saw that at the demonstration at the senior center with your robots.
Right.
Last Tuesday.
Yep. So Kevin is the one with the blue shirt over there, back there. That's Kevin. Yes, it is.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I like that. Oh, okay.
I think I finally got it. Those are just
you have to care. Doesn't one of the benefits?
No, I promised you I'd do it.
How are you?
Doing good.
Thank you.
Is this on maybe on the left side?
Yeah. I'll just hold on to it, yeah.
You don't have any slides?
I don't have any slides. Is that okay if we just chat? Oh, okay. I don't have to do anything. Great.
It's going now.
Okay. Guess I should stop saying all those things. Do you have slides?
I actually need them. I might be able to talk about that. Yeah.
For people who have missed lectures, what I really want from your summary is not only a summary of the concepts, but also your thoughts and observations and reflection as well. I want to know what you feel about the material. So you need both of those things to get it accepted. Okay. So, Morgan, you're up.
Great. I'm just going to sit. I'll come out front. Yeah, that works. Hi, everyone. My name is Morgan. I am a senior. I'm actually going to go back behind the table so I can see everyone. If this is okay. I am really happy to be here. Thank you for having me. And I'll start just by telling you a bit about my story and where I come from, and then a bit about my experiences at Stanford, and then some about how this all relates to mechanical engineering, which is something that I don't have any experience with other than as being a user of assistive technology, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. So if I say anything, just ask me questions. You can interrupt me, raise your hand, say something. It won't throw me off. So just let me know if I say anything that needs clarification. So I'm a senior. I'm a hum bio major, and I primarily focus in cross-cultural health and American health policy. What that actually means is I really like classes about interracial relations in healthcare, working with people across differences, and then also working within the U.S. healthcare system. My mom is a nurse, which brought up a lot of these interests throughout my life and also made it a lot easier for me growing up as a person with a disability because my mom had a really intricate understanding of the healthcare system and, you know, when I fell, which I did a lot as a kid, she could get me into the ER more quickly. I'm from a small city, Scranton, Pennsylvania, made famous by The Office. Not the most accessible of towns, but still a cool place to call home. I came to Stanford. At first, I came to visit because I had two friends with disabilities who were also here. They were a few years older than me. We all went to summer camp together outside of Philadelphia, and one was at Berkeley and one was at Stanford, and they were navigating the area really well. So it seemed like a smart idea to get away from the snow and the oldness of East Coast cities and try this area out. I fell in love with it. Didn't really tell anyone I was applying. No one from my high school for like 15 years had gone here. And then I got in, and it was like the second day afterwards I was coming. So Berkeley didn't really have a chance. Their programs weren't as alluring to me, and they have this weird thing called their disabled students program, which used to be really awesome and like pioneered the ability for people with disabilities to go to college, but in my opinion now is completely segregates people with disabilities and has some flaws in it. So I can talk about that with you later. At Stanford, I started off, wasn't really involved with anything related to people with disabilities. In high school, I kind of pushed away from all of that. All of my friends were able-bodied people. After I stopped going to summer camp, I kept in touch with my friends, but I didn't really have like a strong identity with the community. And then I started taking classes in humbio and anthropology, medical anthropology, and we were talking about LGBTQ health, we were talking about health across races, across genders, and everything, but we were never talking about disabilities, and it really, really bugged me, and I started thinking about my experiences primarily in the healthcare system and how really difficult they were, whether it was insurance or finding the right doctor or finding a doctor who knew what my disability was really difficult. So what my disability is, something I should share with all of you. I have spinal muscular atrophy, which is pretty much exactly what it sounds like. It's a neurodegenerative disorder, recessive. So both of my parents are carriers, but they didn't know that when they had me. I was diagnosed when I was 2 years old. And basically the reason why was I wasn't crawling. So my grandmother, who was my primary caregiver when I was a kid, brought me to the doctor, and a year or so of testing, they came back positive with SMA. What SMA does to the body depends person by person. For me, I can feel everything, but I have limited use of my limbs. All of my involuntary muscles are completely healthy and fine, which is something I'm very grateful for. It's not something that a lot of people can say. So I haven't had many health complications. I had scoliosis when I was a kid. My back muscles just weren't strong enough to hold the weight of my body. So I had spinal fusion surgery down pretty much the entire length of my back. So now it's really hard for me to balance. If you come up to me and just kind of like nudge me in the shoulder, I'll probably fall over, which makes certain things in life, like going to parties, interesting and fun and exciting. And yeah, that's my disability. Are there any questions about that? I can stand, which is great, but I can't walk. I can use my hands, but I get tired writing. So Terry helps me get accommodations when it comes to exams, which is really helpful. Things like that. When I was a sophomore, I decided that I wanted to start looking a bit more into health of people with disabilities and primarily kids with disabilities because I really like working with kids. It was always something that I liked doing in high school, and I wanted to figure out a way to do it here. So I came to this class when I was a sophomore. I met Ralph Hotchkiss, who you'll meet. Ralph's an incredible guy. He started this group called Whirlwind Wheelchair, and what they do is design wheelchairs for people living in developing countries. So that kind of bridged everything I was interested in, maintaining health, working with people across cultures, and working with people with disabilities. The only thing missing was the kids aspect. Whirlwind primarily works with adults. So Whirlwind connected me to United Cerebral Palsy, which is a huge NGO. And what they do is build wheelchairs for children with disabilities in developing countries, based out of their LA office. So primarily what they needed was to know, are people using their wheelchairs? Because it costs about $190 to design their chairs. They have a huge process where they have social workers who work with the kids and with the families to make sure that they understand how to use the chairs. They check in with them to see how their health is going and how everything's developing and how the kids are growing. But when they surveyed families, they found out that only 10% of the kids were using their chairs for more than 2 hours a day. There's a lot of co-founding factors that go around being a person with a disability in a developing country. So they asked me to come out to their site in Indonesia and work with kids with disabilities in their homes and try to understand why they weren't using their chairs. So Stanford paid for it. I got a grant from UAR. I traveled for the first time out of the U.S. to a country that's completely inaccessible, has a huge stigma against people with disabilities. I was a white woman from America who didn't speak the language. There were a lot of issues going on there. But it ended up working out really well. I fell in love with the culture, I fell in love with the kids, and I went back for a second summer. So my second summer, which is what's probably behind me, I worked with UCP to start a support group program for parents of kids with disabilities to educate them on health, the use of assistive technology, the need for going to school, and mostly the need for self-advocacy. So the ability for someone with a disability to say, these are my needs, this is what I want, and this is what I need from you to make sure that everything happens how I want it to happen, not how you want it to happen. So training kids from a young age to be, you know, great self-advocates is really hard, but we tried our best to do it, and the support groups are going now. I work with the group remotely. We have 15 people on the ground doing field research. We have a few social workers, and then we have a lot of mothers of kids with disabilities who we train to be able to run these support groups. So a lot of my studies have been around how to be a self-advocate, how to navigate a healthcare system, and then how to effectively use assistive technology. So that's like a very broad background over the 4 years that I've been here and what I care about. I think I've been talking for about 5 minutes. So, yeah, great question. I'm graduating, and I right now am looking at an internship at the World Health Organization to do a summer internship on disability policy. So they have a lot of great stuff going on with polio eradication and vaccines, but also with assistive technology development and devices. So I am vehemently trying to make some network connections there and work there this summer, and then after that, we'll see what happens. And I'm open for any types of questions. I can tell you a bit about my wheelchair and the wheelchair I use, the wheelchairs we use in Indonesia, if that's at all helpful.
I think we might be good there.
Do the next person. Okay, cool. Next is Vivian. Do you want to share? Okay.
My name is Vivian. I actually graduated last year, class of 2012, in international relations and French. I am currently working in the city at two education nonprofits as part of a postgraduate public service fellowship through the Hawk Center. So I took a spin fellowship. I'm working at one nonprofit called Common Sense Media, and they teach digital literacy and digital citizenship to youth and families. And I work 3 days there, and it's more of like an office, like cubicle environment. And the other 2 days of the week, I work at Mission High School at this mentorship program for at-risk inner-city youth. And it's very much like an academic mentoring, college counseling kind of program. And I'm really enjoying it. I live at home right now in East Bay. So I commute every day using BART, or sometimes I drive. The assistive technology that I use is, well, actually, let me talk about my disability first. So I was born with a congenital spinal disorder called spondylothoracic dysplasia. So what that means is I was born with a limited neck rotation, meaning that this is as far as I can rotate my neck, and I... This joint doesn't work so much, so I can raise my right hand fully, but this one, this is probably the highest it goes. There's a curvature of the spine, and a fusion of the neck, and limited lung capacity. So my capacity is actually a third of a typical lung capacity. And let's see. So the assistive technology that I use for my car is pedal extensions. I sit on a couple cushions to raise me up, and I also have cameras for my blind spots. So I have two side blind spot cameras and one for my rear view, and I have a monitor. So this is kind of standard procedure now in a lot of cars, I'm realizing. So I have a 2007 like Toyota, and they didn't have that back then. But now I see, like, you know, a lot of cars coming out with, like, that backing up camera, which is pretty cool. It'll make shopping for cars a lot easier in the future. And I would be nowhere without this car. Like, this is my source of independence. Because when you're growing up with a disability, I'm sure, like, you guys can attest to this, your parents are very, very overprotective and, like, very, you know, they're always on you to make sure you're safe and, like, you know, no one pushes you around kind of thing. So having my own car was a huge deal. And right when I got it, I feel like life just began. It was very much like being able to move where you wanted to go, that, like, freedom to, you know, be where you wanted to go, be where you wanted to be was very important to me. So throughout my childhood, I was very resistant to accepting my disability. So like Morgan, I had all able-bodied friends, and I come from a very homogenous neighborhood in Walnut Creek, and it's just very, it's not so much homogenous in race, but it's very homogenous in thinking. So that mindset of, like, what is normal is very Crate and Barrel, Pottery Barn, like, very, like, cookie cutter, which is, like, great, like, you know, those great styles, but also very, you know, like, hard to fit into the mold if you don't quite, you know, come that way. So, growing up, I was very much raised to think a certain way of, like, what is normal. And for my whole life, I was very much adapt. And I did really well. I, you know, I had a bunch of friends. I was class president, school, like, you know, school body president. And gone to Stanford. It was great. But it also, you know, reinforces thinking of, like, hey, you're not disabled. You are super abled. Or, you know, that's what, like, my friends would say. Like, they would very much, like, deny me of that identity of being disabled because being disabled was so bad. You know, because of that diss, that sound of diss, it just seems like this has a very bad connotation. And, you know, even with the, you know, with the famous people with disabilities, like, yeah, like, you know, they have disabilities, and, you know, like Professor Jaffe said, it's, like, not despite they have disabilities, but it's just a part of their identity, right? But at the same time, it was really difficult for me to express that part of myself. Up until college when I, you know, got so indignant that I was like, you know, this is not okay. I started advocating for people with disabilities through student government here at Stanford. I also connected with local nonprofits, so Abilities United and the Silicon Valley Independent Living Center, which I'm currently serving as a board member on their executive board. So I got really, really passionate about advocating for other people with disabilities, and in that process became more and more comfortable with my own identity. Because I really believe that if you don't advocate for yourself, then how are you going to advocate for others, right? So that that empathizing component of this class is extremely important. So I really appreciate and commend all of you for taking this class and being interested in assistive technology, but I cannot stress enough, like, how important it is to really get to know your users, because there's such, like, a inner turmoil, like, battle going on within them about how to be in society, in a society that has a stigma against people with disabilities. So when you're creating assistive technology, for me, it's, like, very, so, like, when I'm, like, sitting in a normal desk and chair, sometimes it's difficult because of my truncated torso. So if I sit in a normal chair regularly, then, like, the desk will hit me up to here. So sometimes I kneel on my chair, right? But I think it's important, like in this class, for you to like really redefine what's normal. Because if I like sat on a booster seat at like age 23 in a restaurant, like that's kind of weird, right? But like, you know, there's a story, like someone walks into a room and they expect lights and chairs and a desk for them. But, you know, someone comes in with a wheelchair who's blind, doesn't need, you know, a chair, doesn't need a chair or lights. So why is that all, like, standard? And obviously there are, like, economic reasons for that, but, I don't know, it's just interesting to think about what is considered normal, what is considered standard these days. So when you're creating these, like, you know, technologies, there's, like, a really fine line between making something that looks normal and also something that helps the user. So it really bothers me when, let me tell you a story about this Abilities Expo. This is an assistive technology conference that I went to, and it was basically all of these assistive technology companies coming to showcase their work. And it was really cool, like very interesting. Like a lot of people with disabilities came. It was in San Jose, and there were a ton of booths, ton of resources. But it was such a weird vibe for all these companies to be there to help us, right? But it was also a very weird dynamic because they. It seemed a little condescending at the same time, right? So it was very much like, hey, here are these services, like I want your money kind of thing. And it just didn't have the right vibe. I would have appreciated a little bit more if these assistive technology companies actually worked together with some of the community building advocacy groups in the area. And I thought that was a missing component of this expo. And I think it'd be really cool for you guys to, you know, reach out to those local nonprofits, community building nonprofits, and seeing what, you know, what they need and what you can do for them and how you guys can partner. So that was just rambling, but yeah.
Describe a little bit the Power to Act.
Actually, Morgan Duff is one of the co-presidents this year. But it was my junior year. I started working through the ASSU as the chair of disabilities. As the chair of disabilities, which was a pretty new position. I wanted to really revive the student group for disabilities that was really, really active back in the 80s. And since then, it had kind of fizzled. So I created a Power to Act. Abilities coming together, which is a cross-disability community-building student group that creates safe social spaces for students with hidden and visible disabilities. So what I mean by cross-disability is that it welcomes people with physical, with learning, with all types of disabilities. Because I really wanted to kind of like make sure that like people understood that you know, we can work together. Like, people with one type of disability, they don't need to segregate themselves, right? So, yes, and we're more interested. Yeah.
If any of you are interested in finding people to help you with your project, you can join our mailing list, power2act@mailman.hanford.edu. So, we would love to have you all on our mailing list to hear about what's coming up and what's going on in the disability community at Hanford.
Anybody have any questions for the video? Well,
thank you. Yeah. Emily, are you ready? Okay. I think this will probably work. I just won't move around too much.
Here's the laser pointer.
So, oh my.
There you are.
OK. Okay, great. So I'm going to turn the tables a little bit and talk about learning disabilities. I'll preface it by saying that I don't use much assistive technology yet. It's not that I'm opposed to it, but my main constraint is a time constraint. I think that that's for a lot of people with learning disabilities. So if I can get twice as much out of understanding something, but it takes twice as much time, it's usually not a good deal for me. So I'll just start an introduction. This is my second quarter at Stanford. I'm a freshman from Denver. And I think what you heard from here, not surprisingly, I'm interested in the brain and both learning disabilities and mental health. So for me, as I said, my disabilities are, at least what I've been told, dyslexia and working memory deficit. So that comes into play with problems with spelling. The reading is difficult for me, particularly speed and accuracy. And the accuracy really comes into play with the working memory. Memory gaps in general, it's similar to being blacked out a lot of the time. And then it's difficult for me to retain memory over a period of time. So, for instance, if it's a cumulative class, by 2 weeks out, I don't remember what I learned 2 weeks ago. So that's challenging. And then the other thing is that when I increase my reading speed, so we have two problems. We have a reading speed problem and a reading understanding problem. So if I increase my speed, my retention goes way down, whereas it might be a slope like this. For me, it's like this. So that's something to keep in mind. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about coping strategies since I don't really use assistive technology yet, and see if that gets you brainstorming. So for me, I like to do reading and reading summaries. So I'll read the book if I can, if I have time. And then right before I go into a test-taking situation like a quiz, or right before class, I like to read the summary. Because I believe that I have all the information there. I just need it to be sparked. So if I can read an entire book, go in, and not remember anything. The only problem is that, like all summaries, they have issues. They don't cover everything. So if it's a very detailed analysis, sometimes I still won't be able to recall. The other issue with that is it doesn't help much with time. So that brings us to the next one. I'm not saying these are great strategies. They're just the ones that I've employed so far. So one of them is strategic selection. So if I know that I have too much to read and I won't be able to read it all. So I'll try to read, if it's a scientific paper like this one, I'll try to read the abstract and I'll go through and try to get the important parts. Sometimes it's reading the header, and then if I think I understand it, I won't read it, and vice versa, which isn't a great strategy, but time is the problem. So that's a form of chunking. And then if it's online, I can also do searching, you know, a little squiggle F for things I'm looking for. A slightly less helpful strategy is random sampling. So I'll read parts of the reading and try to piece it together from there. So then the other thing that I try to do is book on tape. It works really well because for me, I also have a tracking problem, so reading in general is just very difficult for me. But the problem there is it takes a lot of time. Obviously, they read in a dramatic voice and so on. And also, if you've ever listened to a book on tape, sitting there for 7 hours, it's difficult to focus. So what I try to do is I take notes, which functions in two ways. One, it helps you concentrate. And two, I can then use those notes as a summary. But obviously that is also difficult time-wise. If I try to do all of these, I just won't get it done. And then the other thing that I like to use sometimes is text-to-speech software. I think I've tried pretty much all of it, and it's not exceptional yet. I challenge you to do something about that, because it's slow, there's problems with it, and frankly, it's hard to concentrate when it's just robotic. And so then I'm going to talk a little bit about the additional resources I use. I go to tutoring. CTL is great. But because a lot of my studying is somewhat cram focused, because if I study weeks in advance, it's not going to do me any good. It's difficult to schedule in advance for that. So I like to use my friends because they usually know what they're doing. But that can be taxing as well if I'm always going to certain friends who are in my classes. So going on that, I try to use a triangulation method. So I'll try to do some tutoring, some friends. I'll listen to what's in section. I'll read parts of the book. And then together, I can usually piece it together. It's not a very fun way to do it because a lot of times you'll miss stuff, but you got to do what you got to do. And then obviously spell check. And then finally, I just want to put in a plug for Time and a Half. I always said, I'm not stupid, but I'm slow, which sounds funny, but it's true. And I can pretty safely say that I wouldn't be here if it weren't for Time and a Half, because I can't produce that quickly, so that's helpful. So, talk a little bit about my future. I don't know for sure. I'm a freshman. Still got some time, but I'm thinking either hum bio or psych. Bio was an option for a little bit, but based on my experience with chem so far, I don't know about that. Ideally, I'd like to do a career in research. I'm thinking more and more social sciences, even though I came in being like, got to do bio-E. I have to say I am a little concerned. I don't know how I can scale my coping mechanisms as things get tougher. But, you know, that's part of the job. So then I know this is a class on helping people with disabilities, so I thought I would talk a little bit about what I think would be helpful. So being a research-oriented person, I would say general memory enhancement would be a good way to go because, first of all, it can help the occasional person like me, and then additionally, I know there's a lot of old people who could benefit from that. Also, TBI, traumatic brain injury, and PTSD intervention. I know that's an area of study, especially at Stanford. It's personal to me, and I find it very interesting, so hopefully I will be there someday. And then assistive technology, like I said, text-to-speech would be helpful, but then it still has the same main constraint of time. So I'm going to say I will ask you to brainstorm. And that is the end. Thank you. Comparable. I wouldn't say I'm more of an auditory learner. I wish I were. It's just that the reading is so laborious. It takes so much effort for me that I end up not comprehending it because there's so much effort involved. So I like to do that, but again, it takes a long time to be read to.
Well, okay, yeah. A lot of people that are blind. They have a special reporter that speaks up incredibly. So, usually you can understand speech, and you can't produce guest speech. So, a lot of blind people, and maybe you'll hear from the
caller,
you know, they have their information by speech output, and it's so fast that you
just
understand it if you're not used to it.
Yeah. I've thought about that, but even listening to you guys, it's difficult for me to hear something and comprehend it at the same time. It's a bit fast.
Have you tried the Amazon Kindle?
I have not.
The reason I bring that up is Kindle Fire HD has text-to-speech at half speed, normal speed, time and half speed, double time speed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah.
My understanding, learning disorders often get confused with
Right.
So what level of diagnosis did you actually get? Do you have things that go into your anatomy like an MRI or something like that?
The way I did it was, I think, is pretty standard for academic-oriented evaluation. Is I went to a woman who specializes in learning disabilities, took a bunch of tests. Some of them were written, some of them were oral. And from those results, apparently, I didn't look at all the math, but you can quantitatively tell what's going on. But no, I haven't had any biological work done. I would be really interested to get an MRI and see what's going on up there, but that hasn't happened yet.
Do you have any specific note-taking techniques that help you?
So I tried this last quarter, to do two things. One, have a note-taker. And two, have you guys seen the little pen LiveScribe? Yeah. I tried that. The only problem is that the thought, it's the doing two things at one time. So either I would listen to the lecture, have someone write the notes for me, and then try to go over them, but they're not my notes, so it's not the same thought process, and sometimes it doesn't work that way. Also, the time of having to print out all the different notes or look them up. But that was helpful. It was really helpful. And I think it would have been more helpful if there's a way you can do this where you input writing into text and then you can search from there. So I'm going to try that next time. And then LiveScribe, I thought, was helpful, but no more for me than like a normal pen. It made me think about it more, so I took better notes, but I didn't end up going back because my notes were pretty much sufficient from that.
What accommodations do you need for test taking?
I do time and a half, and that makes sense. Yep.
If discussion helps with information retention for you, have you tried taking notes with a speech-to-text software type?
I haven't yet. It's interesting. Yeah. It's just it's again the time thing. The work is set out for someone who will listen to it and remember it, or listen to it, look it up, and remember it. But I need to be re-lectured right before the test every time, sort of thing. And with that same cram method, it's difficult to do sustained classes. Okay.
Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, I was expecting a fourth student, but she might be sick or might have forgotten, so that's unfortunate. Fiona, like I said, has lost her voice, and Paige was supposed to be here, so that's too bad. But, you know, I know that there are some other students in the class that have disabilities that may be a little hidden. I wondered if they might want to step forward and reveal themselves, come out of the closet, whatever. Nate, did you say something?
Sure, come on down.
Hi, I'm Nathaniel Nguyen, and I have something called Crohn's disease. It's an autoimmune disorder where my immune system attacks my own gastrointestinal tract. So what really challenges me is being able to consistently attend much of anything. One of the difficulties with Crohn's is because it deals with the immune system, no two people are the same, so it's very difficult to find a set of medications that helps keep everything under control, and that is something that I've struggled with for my entire time at Stanford. So I guess it's there is some research happening worldwide. There's not that much. It's not a particularly well-known issue. even though about 1 out of 200 people suffers from it or colitis, which is very closely related. But having it difficult to consistently attend things makes class a challenge. Just attending class, it makes it difficult to attend discussion sections. Anything with required attendance is problematic at best. And I really see this as a challenge because I learn best from participating in discussion sections with other people, with TAs, with groups. So while I often do have, quote-unquote, a lot of free time when I'm effectively bedridden, it's hard to use this time in a way that might be appropriate. So as far as technology that would help me, further research into Crohn's disease, further research into medications that might be helpful for it. And I guess a big one, there is a quote-unquote cure-all drug for Crohn's, but it is not perfectly effective for everyone, and it comes with some very, very, very potentially deadly side effects. So not a lot of Crohn's patients end up using it. So further research into drugs that can help the immune system stay under control also help leave me with a working immune system, which has also been a problem in the past. If there is a strain of anything going around, I will get it. And, of course, miss more class. Something that will make me able to participate in life as well as the quote-unquote typical person might would be extremely helpful. So, holding out hope.
And it looks like Paige has arrived, so just in time to wrap it up. Okay. We have about 8 minutes.
That's funny. Okay, hi, I'm Paige. I'm a junior, and I have ADD and dysgraphia. And you probably know what ADD is, attention deficit disorder. I take medication for that, and so that affects my life if I don't take my meds. And so I take my meds, and so that's pretty much all good. But dysgraphia, up there, somewhere up there spelled, is a disability that makes it hard for me to handwrite legibly. When I was little, elementary school, everyone would, you had to like handwrite things, and you had to like handwrite your papers, and then they'd be like corrections, and then they'd make you redo it, and I just was like, I don't want to do that. So then I fell behind and became a failing student, and that was bad. And then in 7th grade or 6th grade, I had a really awesome teacher who knew that I was smart. I loved math because I didn't have to write things, and so I was really into math and science because I hated handwriting things. And so then he got me into writing by giving me a computer, and that changed my life. I just like to use a computer, so then I became really into writing and stuff, and that's why I go to Stanford now, because like I never stopped just because I was really excited to be able to show that I could do stuff, that I could actually, I was smart, because people didn't think I was for a long time. And then, well, they knew I was smart, but they didn't think I could, like, they didn't think I cared or that I tried, but I did. And so what helped me is handwriting. I don't handwrite things, I type them. So I use a laptop for exams and taking notes. And when I do want to handwrite things, because, you know, writing this down, I find that helps me memorize things better. I'll just get, like, a sheet of paper and then just kind of go like this, just scribble back and forth. But imagine I'm writing the letters, and it saves energy, because otherwise I'll waste a lot of time and, you know, spend a lot of time trying to make pretty letters, and then I look back and it's like chicken scratch. And so that's what I do pretty much. I also like to use colors to learn, but that's just because it's more fun when it's colorful. That's me. So, I don't really have anything else to say.
Yeah, are you doing well here at Stanford?
Yeah, I love it. The OAE is phenomenal. They're so great, and they let you have, so I get extended timing on exams, and I have, I use computer use on exams, but it's usually a scrub computer, so it's like, there's nothing on it, but just like a word processor, and that just helps a lot for me to be able to type things out. And the OA has been phenomenal in letting me try different accommodations. Like, they let me try using one of those pens that records what's going on at the same time. It records audio, so then you like press on the place like where you took the note, and it'll play what the person was saying as you took that note. So you can just take down a little short notes. I don't actually use this tool because, like, I personally just, you know, I prefer to type light speed because I'm, like, really fast at typing now. So.
What goals do you have for your future after Stanford?
Well, I'm majoring in science, technology, and society on the IT, media, and society track. So taking half, like, comm courses, writing courses, and then some CS courses. And I'm just interested in, like, I was pre-med, and then I did the Hum BioCore now. So I'm interested in maybe, like, doing just writing and learning about tech and, like, making things, learning the skills and applying them and writing about them, and then maybe doing med school when I'm, like, 30 and tired.
Any questions? Kurt?
I work with people with Parkinson's, the central tremor, who also have bad handwriting problems that are deteriorating. And is your dysgraphia anything like that? Does it come and go, or is it a consistent kind
of... It's a consistent thing. Like, I don't really know the science behind it, or I don't really know much of the details of it, but it's a motor, if anyone does speak up, it's a motor cognitive disability, so it's hard. And so one question I got when I told a person this was, like, they were like, can you throw a ball? And, like, yeah, I can throw a ball, I can do sports, I have, like, I'm coordinated, just handwriting, like, just always from the very beginning I had horrible handwriting, and trying to write neatly takes a ton of energy for me. And so I can write like this scribble thing. And sometimes I can read it, sometimes I can't read it. Most of the time I can read it, though, because I'm so used to my own handwriting. And other times, like, I'm just so flustered that I can't, like, handwrite, so I'll type something. But usually I just can handwrite, like, for a page, and then that goes. But it doesn't come and go. It's something that's, like, just kind of, it's permanent.
So it's not going to get worse, but it doesn't sound like it's going to get better.
Yeah, I don't really try to make it get better because I don't handwrite things very often. Yeah. Like I can handwrite little to-do notes to myself and stuff, but handwriting can be fun, like, enjoyable. You know, sometimes you just don't want to stare at a computer screen, but I much prefer typing, and I'm really fast at typing, so I like to type.
That's great.
Yeah.
Is there anything in your normal life that you can't type
when I was little, not having a computer was a problem, but in high school we had a laptop program where everyone had a laptop, so, and, like, a lot of us, our tests were on laptops, so then it wasn't a problem. I got Stanford, and Stanford lets you use a laptop, and then the working world, no problem not having a laptop. And I'm not often in situations where I wish I could write something down, because the only time I need to be taking light speed notes is if I'm, like, in a lecture and I want to be taking notes. Other times I can just, you know, like, just like anyone else, just write on a piece of paper and no one else can understand it, but I can.
Thank you, Paige.
Okay.
I want to note that Paige is wearing a Industries t-shirt. Who knows what they make of Terry.
Thank all the students who participated. It's really great of them to, you know, share their personal lives with the class, and I think it takes a little bit of moxie to do that. So I want to thank you again. I wouldn't say that, you know, it's, I don't like to use the word inspiring, but you can take it, feel any way you want about it. So again, thank all of you for participating. Yeah.
exosuit is his adaptive equipment.
Right. He's wearing a robot, and we've seen some of that, you know, for people who are walking, but his goes way beyond that, so that's neat. So before you leave, be sure to sign up for a ride if you're going on Thursday. Be sure to sign up if you for your attendance, and turn in the evaluation forms. And I'll see you on Thursday. Thanks so much.